And now, VOA's International Edition. Coming up, defending CIA-enhanced interrogations. We'll have the latest on the Ebola outbreak, plus Hong Kong protesters arrested. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman, the chief of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, defending its use of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques in confronting suspected terrorists after the 2001 attacks against the United States. John Brennan disputed a lengthy U.S. Senate report this week that said the harsh questioning tactics yielded no worthwhile intelligence and that they amounted to torture. He acknowledged that some CIA operatives went beyond authorized methods while they interrogated the suspected terrorist and said that their actions rightly should be repudiated.
CIA officers' actions that did comport with the law and policy should neither be criticized nor conflated with the actions of the few who did not follow the guidance issued. At the same time, none of these lapses should be excused, downplayed, or denied. In some instances, we simply failed to live up the standards that we set for ourselves, that the American people expect of us.
And in a Fox News interview, former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney said the CIA did exactly what the White House wanted in setting up the interrogation program.
Partly what really bugs me as I watch all this process unfold is the men and women of the CIA did exactly what we wanted to have them do in terms of taking on this program. We said, we've got to go use enhanced techniques that we're going to find out. And we've got Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's the mastermind of 9/11, who has killed 3,000 Americans, taken down the World Trade Center, hit the Pentagon, would have taken out the White House or the Capitol building, if, in fact, they hadn't been for the passengers on United 93. He is in our possession. We know he's the architect. And what are we supposed to do? Kiss him on both cheeks and say, please, please, tell us what you know. Of course not. We did exactly what needed to be done in order to catch those who were guilty on 9/11 and to prevent a further attack. And we were successful on both parts.
Since the Senate report was released, countries the United States has often criticized for their human rights abuses, including China, sharply attacking the CIA actions. In Beijing, on Thursday, Foreign Ministry spokesperson Hong Lei said the United States has no right to pose itself as an arbiter of right and wrong. Russia and Pakistan joined in on that criticism. Human rights activists are calling for the prosecution of officials involved in the CIA's use of extreme interrogation methods. Also in the news, two explosions have shaken the central Nigerian city of Jos, killing at least 31. Cause of the blast not immediately clear. They occurred near the site of a May bombing that took 118 lives and was suspected to be the work of the Boko Haram militant group. Details about Thursday's explosions are still emerging. World Health Organization says a new Ebola outbreak in Sierra Leone has killed dozens of people, sickened more than 100, but a Sierra Leone government spokesperson says those numbers are too high. Chris Stein reporting from Abuja.
Sierra Leone's Minister of Information, Alpha Kanu, hit back Thursday at media reports of a new outbreak. In a teleconference with journalists, he says the WHO's announcement that an outbreak in the remote Kono district has killed 87 people and sickened 123 was based on improper counting of Ebola casualties.
The huge numbers that seem to be coming out on the wires don't seem to be reflecting on the ground. But part of the explanation for that is that these huge numbers are swelled up by tests carried out on people who are already dead, i.e. the swabs. Because we have a policy in Sierra Leone that any death now is treated as an Ebola death, until proven otherwise.
Since breaking out earlier this year, Ebola has killed more than 6,500 people. Of the three West African countries hardest hit, Ebola now has 7,987 cases, the highest number. Liberia and Guinea have also suffered from the disease. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
International Criminal Court says Ivory Coast must hand over Simone Gbagbo, the wife of former President Laurent Gbagbo, to face charges of genocide from the country's civil war. Ivory Coast has refused to turn her over to the tribunal in the past, saying she should be tried in domestic court. She faces charges of crimes against humanity. Those include murder, rape, and other sexual violence and other so-called inhumane acts. Laurent Gbagbo already in the ICC detention center. There were clashes between Palestinians and Israeli troops on Thursday following the funeral of a Palestinian cabinet minister who died in a confrontation with Israeli security forces this week. Thousands of people, including Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, gathered in Ramallah for the funeral procession of Ziad Abu Ain. During protest on Wednesday, Israeli troops pushed Abu Ain by the neck and chest, also fired tear gas in the area. Palestinian doctors said Thursday that an autopsy showed he died from being struck, while Israeli officials said a heart attack caused his death. Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson Peter Lerner said the military is investigating what happened. Shouting slogans and promising to return, dozens of Hong Kong activists were peacefully taken into custody as authorities began the job of clearing the last remaining barricades and tents from 2 months of pro-democracy protest. Joined by veteran activists and pro-democracy legislators on Thursday, the demonstrators did not resist when police began clearing the protesters' camp near the government headquarters, where demonstrators had gathered for the past 45 days. Exact number of those detained is not immediately clear, but Alan Yong, a pro-democracy lawmaker, had this to say in Hong Kong.
The government and those in power would be able to clear our roads and streets, but they could not win the hearts of Hong Kong people, especially the next two generations of up-and-coming young men and women who are the driving force behind the umbrella movement.
Protesters want Beijing to allow fully democratic elections for Hong Kong's top leader in 2017. China has said all candidates must pass through a screening process. Pope Francis won't be meeting with the Dalai Lama during his visit to Rome, apparently to avoid antagonizing China, but he's sending a greeting to the past Nobel Peace Prize laureates who are gathering in the city for their annual summit. Dalai Lama was quoted as saying Thursday that Vatican authorities had nixed the meeting with him, in his words, because it might create inconveniences. Vatican spokesman Federico Lombardi said he couldn't confirm that an audience had been refused, but he said a papal greeting would be sent. Francis has followed the line of Emeritus Pope Benedict XVI in trying to improve relations with Beijing, which were severed in 1951 after the officially atheistic Communist Party took over and set up its own church outside the Pope's authority. And those are some of the stories in the news, and you can get a lot more right here at voanews.com.
This is Business News on VOA Global with Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Yesterday, we told you about energy stocks dragging down the U.S. markets. What was that all about? Because U.S. stocks ended higher Thursday. New data pointing to a strengthening U.S. economy, and it boosted optimism about holiday spending. Indices, though, were well off their highs for the day, with gains limited by a further drop in those oil prices and the threat of a midnight government shutdown. The Dow advanced 216 points. The NASDAQ was up 24. The S&P gained 9.
Figures from the Commerce Department had retail sales rising 0.7% last month. That is the largest increase in the past 8 months. A surge in auto sales and early promotional offers from retailers boosted November growth. With consumer spending making up 75% of the economy, November sales were often a preview to consumer sentiment and retail profits, especially with a holiday shopping season underway. An increase in November sales brings optimism for that season.
Well, separately, the Labor Department reported fewer Americans filed unemployment claims last week. Jobless claims decreased by 3,000, falling to a three-week low because of staff hiring and retaining rates not seen since 1999. The strong pace of job growth and fewer dismissals has been cited as the result of an improving economy.
Well, let us check those oil prices in a little bit more detail. They slumped further Thursday, with the U.S. crude benchmark settling under $60 a barrel for the first time in more than 5 years. Hopes for stimulus from global central banks and strong U.S. data initially kept oil above $60, but then sellers showed they aren't done yet. On the New York Mercantile Exchange, light sweet crude for delivery in January fell 99 cents to settle at $59.95 a barrel.
Well, I'm liking the lower prices at the pump. That's Business News on VOA Global.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. I had a story here about Walmart and China business making it look strong. They've been using questionable accounting and unauthorized sales practices to make its retail business in China appear stronger. That, according to Bloomberg, citing internal documents and interviews with employees. No comment so far from Walmart.
We'll check up with David Birds now, but the American Cafe is next.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Scientists and educators in the United States and China say it pays to introduce very young children to new technologies, from computer programming to designing electronic circuits. With the right approach, they say, children learn not to be intimidated by abstract thinking. VOA's George Pudich is in the cafe with the story.
Yeah, now you can paint your back.
Even before they learn to read and write, children can manipulate images. Tablet computers with touch-sensitive screens are ideal for lining up simple commands, which is exactly what programming is all about, says Mitchell Resnick, co-developer of a code learning program called Scratch Junior.
Each block tells the characters what to do. You snap the blocks together, and you've made a computer program.
7-year-old Talia Levitt is having a good time.
It's pretty fun because you can do like almost anything on it.
Yeah. It is up to parents to decide how much time their children spend exposed to modern technology. But as Sandra Calvert, director of Children's Digital Media Center at Georgetown University, notes, it's all around us.
We live in the digital age, and just as it's a worry that there may be too much screen time, there's also a concern that our children will be left behind if they don't know how to use the technologies that are going to shape 21st century careers, jobs, and how we are going to succeed as a nation.
At so-called maker spaces in Beijing, children between 4 and 15 also use tools and machines such as 3D printers to create various projects. They are part of the so-called maker movement that started in the U.S. but quickly spread to other countries, connecting people who like to make things with their hands. One of the movement's pioneers, Wang Shenglin, says that trend appeals to the younger generation.
The old generation is like, oh, we go to work, but the young generation, we see them, they start trying. They're trying so hard, actually, to do what they love. And that's the difference.
It goes against tradition in China not to follow the crowd, but young entrepreneurs like 24-year-old Huang Weiji want to change things.
Our generation thinks that we really need to do something we like in order to innovate. To us, we are as capable as foreigners. Why can they do something and we cannot?
Huang says Chinese will have to learn that although opening a private business includes the possibility of failure, his generation will have wider experience of the world, so they will be prepared to make mistakes and learn from them. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
There is a new way of killing certain cancer tumors that allow the patient to go home on the same day. Surgeons at the Keck Medical Center of the University of Southern California became the first doctors to use this procedure on a patient with the help of high-intensity focused ultrasound, or HIFU, and new robotic technology. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
Dr. Inderbir Gill says the process starts with an incision about a centimeter wide. A robotic device then gets into the abdomen, finds the tumor, and kills it.
So that's what's exciting about the case today is that, to our knowledge, for the first time, a kidney tumor has been ablated using high-intensity focused ultrasound as monotherapy without any additional treatment. And allowing us to do this cuts down on the operative time, decreases the blood loss, decreases the chances of complications, preserves kidney function while killing the tumor, and allows the patient to go home the same day.
Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Come on in and sit a spell every day at voanews.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Parkinson's syndrome is a degenerative nerve disorder that usually affects people over age 50. But more and more younger people are being diagnosed with the disease, which affects the motor control system in the brain and is often characterized by tremors. According to the Parkinson's Foundation, as many as 10 million people are living with the disease worldwide. The costs of treatment, lost income, and Social Security payments are estimated at nearly $25 billion a year each year in the United States alone. Britain's Analog Theater Company is helping to give people without the disease the opportunity to see what it's like to struggle with symptoms. People sit in front of an interactive table place setting and use video and wearable technology to simulate a young man with Parkinson's who was about to give the best man's toast at a wedding. A rotating device on the person's hand causes them to tremble, similar to a Parkinson's tremor. Liam Jarvis is the co-director of the Analog Theater Company. He told the Reuters news agency that the immersive experience helps people actually feel what someone with Parkinson's feels.
And they hold the screen in front of their hand, and the sense is that they're feeling all the sensations and experiencing what the hand feels. So when you see the hand in the video attempt to pick up some soup and start tremoring and struggling to keep the soup on the spoon, that sensation passes into the user's hand, triggered at a time code that syncs up with everything happening in the video, and the Raspberry Pi coordinates and orchestrates the timing of everything that takes place.
Analog is working with a British charity and a behavioral neuropsychologist at Royal Holloway University to make the experience realistic. Liam Jarvis says his hope is that using the device will give those who don't have Parkinson's a better understanding of those who do.
So what we were interested in is what can we offer, what experience could we create that might bridge the knowledge divide between the person that has those conditions and the person that doesn't experience those symptoms firsthand.
One man who knows firsthand the struggles of Parkinson's is Bob Taylor. He came down with the disease in his 40s. He told Reuters he hopes the interactive device will help raise awareness about the disease.
I would just like people to be more aware and not to feel that people are drunk or high on drugs. If they're spilling drinks or soup, it's that awareness that will really make a difference to people's lives.
Narendra Ramnani is a neuropsychologist at Royal Holloway University. He told Reuters that he hopes the experience will help those who work with Parkinson's patients.
The people who need to be in daily contact with people who have Parkinson's disease will gain more of an insight into the mindset of somebody with Parkinson's. So you can understand why a particular individual is thinking the way that they do, why a particular individual is perhaps a little more distracted by their symptoms and why they can focus on some things but not others because they have to deal with these ongoing symptoms, for example.
Ramnani says he hopes the understanding gained using the device will help caregivers, including his students, be more compassionate towards Parkinson's sufferers.
This gives you a human insight into the condition, and I felt by using this kit that I was a step closer towards understanding the kind of thing that I want to teach about to my students.
Liam Jarvis says that the kit has been tested with several audiences in Britain, including at the Edinburgh Festival and at London Science Museum. Jarvis says he would like to develop devices that help people understand other symptoms, including difficulty making facial expressions and muscular rigidity. So what do you think? Do you know someone who suffers with Parkinson's syndrome? Would an interactive device like this one help you better understand them? Let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd. We all have our projects. I know, Ira, you've got a few of your own. A father and son in Britain built a 38-foot boat in their garden, only to find that it's too big to wheel out.
They couldn't get it out of the garden. Roofing business owner John Cousins and his 26-year-old son Dan eventually hoisted the thing over their house with a giant crane. Father and the son who built the home made a 38-foot boat worth about 175,000 pounds there. They couldn't get it out, but they finally did, and more power to them.
This is Sports on VOA Global with Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Quite often we've got news in the NBA that we don't get to, so we're going to start with it today.
Why not? Golden State extended its franchise record winning streak to 14 games by beating Houston 105-93 Wednesday, pulling away late to turn a tight game into a comfortable victory. Warriors improved to 19-2, two games ahead of Memphis in the fight over the best record in the overall league and the Western Conference.
Elsewhere, Dallas beat New Orleans to close within 1.5 games off the Grizzlies in the tightly fought Southwest Division. Washington came up with a buzzer beater to defeat Orlando, and the Los Angeles Clippers notched a 9th straight victory by downing Indiana.
I don't want to be a homer, but the Washington Wizards playing very well this year. LeBron James missed the Cleveland Cavaliers morning shoot-around today in order to receive treatment on general soreness in his left knee. That, according to the team, he'll be a game-time decision when the Cavs attempt to extend their winning streak to 9 games Thursday night against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Well, the NBA has reached a commercial partnership with Brazil's top basketball league, taking over its marketing, advertising, and licensing deals. That deal was announced Thursday. It's expected to give a huge boost to the sport in Brazil and should help the NBA continue expanding its presence in the South American nation of more than 200 million people.
McLaren Honda showed its new driver lineup for 2015 at their factory near London Thursday. Spaniard Fernando Alonso joins from Ferrari, while 2014 race driver Jenson Button of Great Britain is retained in that role. Kevin Magnussen of Denmark, the other 2014 race driver, will remain with the team as a test and reserve driver. Button is the 2009 world champion and has had the useful experience of driving for the Honda team when the Japanese company withdrew from Formula One. He was asked about the prospect of two world champions fighting for points from within the same team.
Personally, I feel that we bring a lot to this team working together. I think we're both very grown up, intelligent enough to understand that we have to work closely together.
Button added, you do your talking out on the circuit, that's the way it has to be.
And that's the way it is. That's sports on VOA Global.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on The Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're parading the 5 most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending December 13th, 2014. The Grammy nominations were announced last Friday, and almost all our featured acts earned at least one nod. The exceptions in 5th place were Maroon 5 dips a slot with Animals. Don't feel too bad for them, though. I'll explain after the song. Baby, I'm Maroon 5 loses a slot in 5th place with Animals. Although Adam Levine and his crew failed to earn a Grammy nomination this year, they've been there before. The Los Angeles group owns 3 titles, including a 2005 win for Best New Artist. Maroon 5 will welcome the new year with a 2-night stand in Las Vegas. Their next tour kicks off February 16th in Texas with Magic as the opening act. Speaking of magic, Taylor Swift has possessed it all year long. She just grabbed 3 Grammy nominations, and we'll take a closer look after Shake It Off. Taylor Swift rebounds a slot to fourth place with her former champ, Shake It Off. The seven-time Grammy winner just picked up three more nominations: Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best Pop Solo Performance, all for the hit you just heard, Shake It Off. Holding in third place is Hozier, who just earned a Grammy nomination of his own. How did he react? I'll tell you after Take Me to Church.
Take me to church, I worship like a dog at the shrine of your light. I'll tell you my sins and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death, the good God, let me give you my life. Take me to church, I worship like a dog at the shrine of your light. I'll tell you my sins and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death, the good God, let me give you my life.
That's Andrew Hozier Byrne, also known as Hozier. He stays put in third place with his breakout hit, Take Me to Church. The Irish singer-songwriter tweeted that he was bowled over when Take Me to Church earned a Song of the Year Grammy nomination. It competes against Taylor Swift's Shake It Off, Sam Smith's Stay With Me, Sia's Chandelier, and our next song, Meghan Trainor's All About That Bass. The young singer made a Grammy splash this year. Hold on for more.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass.
Meghan Trainor continues to hold second place with her former champion, All About That Bass. It's nominated for both Record and Song of the Year. Meghan's been writing music since age 11, and became a professional songwriter while still in high school. Meghan also says she wants to meet Taylor Swift at the Grammy ceremony next year, and they'll have plenty in common. I'll have details after Blank Space, holding at number one.
So it's gonna be forever, or it's gonna go down in flames. You can tell me when it's over, if the high was worth the pain. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. Cause you know I love the players, and you love the game. Cause we're young and we're reckless, we'll take this way too far. It'll leave you breathless, or with a nasty scar. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. But I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name.
Taylor Swift spends a third week at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart with Blank Space. On February 8th, the Grammys will be handed out. Meghan Trainor says she wants to finally say hi to Taylor, and they can compare notes. Just as Meghan became a professional songwriter as a teenager, so Taylor signed a Nashville artist development deal at the tender age of 14. That's going to do it for now, but the charts never stand still. Join me next week, and we'll see who moves up or moves on. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
From The Voice of America, this is VOA Global with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Thank you for being with us, spending some time with us this day. We have a story out of Washington State, not Washington, D.C. A hospital in Washington State, which is in the northwest corner of the United States, says a woman gave birth this month to a baby weighing nearly 15 pounds.
Oh,
that's almost 6.5 kilograms.
Ouch.
Grays Harbor Community Hospital says the average newborn weighs about 7.5 pounds at birth. Yes. Jessica Ortiz Delgado delivered a boy named Francisco Leon Ortiz, who weighed 14 pounds, 11 ounces at birth. Delgado's two other children were about 12 pounds each at birth, but the mother didn't expect her newest to be so large. Who does? Both the mother and son are doing well, and the mother is saying, oh, God, thank God he's not there.
She must have eaten a lot, or she already has an NFL contract for him, waiting for him to be a lineman.
Well, then we have the story from the University of Vermont. Three students are accused of stealing a chicken from a fraternity house there, killing the chicken, and then eating it in their dormitory. The county prosecutor there says he has declined to prosecute the students. All three cases have been referred to a reparative justice board. What are they going to say? I was hungry?
Well, they did say they received a report of trespassing and larceny, that is.
Oh, well. Well, that's going
to roll the credits, Ira.
I'm doing that. Our director, Tracy Carter. Technical director, Jackson Witt. Our managing director is Diane Gowell. For Jim, I'm Ira Melman. Have yourself a great weekend, everybody.
See you next week.